want to talk about in this particular lesson is how students, or virtually anyone that is studying for information, can recall that information at will for test time and virtually lock it into the knowledge bank for future reference weeks, months, and years later. Now, before I do this, I must preface this lesson by stating an important aspect to learning. If you are a student, and perhaps you're in a lecture course, or perhaps you are in a course that requires much reading of mundane information, the question always arises is, Kevin, how can I recall all this information, most of which is technical, some of it's very boring and very mundane? How do I recall it all so I can get an A on the test? My question to you listening to this tape is this. If you're going to take an exam, perhaps it's from several chapters in a textbook, or maybe it's from a lecture that you've listened to, maybe a lecture class all week long, where you simply listen to the lecture and then go in and take the exam on a Friday. My question is this. If you could take with you notes, your own notes, to class, would you do well? I think the answer is obvious. I think you'd do great. Now, I have to ask you one more question. If you had to take your notes, and there was one stipulation, and that stipulation is you cannot have any longer notes than maybe 2-3 words. No sentences in your notes, just key words or key phrases. Could you do that? Of course you could. You see, this is the crux of recall and memory and learning. If you're reading a particular chapter, what you do when you read that, the key is to read it and pull out all of the key information. Notes, key words, key phrases, key facts and details, so that if you took those notes to class, you'd do well. Once you do that, it's going to be very easy, as you'll see, to take that data and commit it to memory using memory techniques. Now let's talk about, just for a moment, study courses where there's lecture-oriented classes. There are two rules in a lecture-oriented classes. Number one, if at all possible, do not bring any note paper, do not bring a pencil with you to class. Instead, bring a tape recorder. Now, why? Because it's virtually impossible to write notes and listen at the same time. You can't do it. When you're writing notes, you're missing what the person's saying at that particular moment. If you have a tape recorder with you, you can listen to that entire hour or hour and a half lecture and be listening intently to what the professor is saying. That's rule one. Rule two is ask questions when you need clarification or that you missed a point. Always ask questions in the lecture class. And number three is make believe in your mind that what that professor is saying, he is talking directly to you one-on-one. And number four, whatever he says, try to imagine it in a story form. See what he says in pictures in your mind. Be vivid. If he's talking technical information or historical facts or something, vividly see what he is saying in your mind's eye. That'll help keep your interest and attention. Now, when you go home later, and we recommend that you do this within a 24-hour period of time, you listen again to the lecture, which is now on cassette tape. Now, people always tell me, Kevin, I have many lecture classes in a day. I don't have time to listen to all of my tapes. Yes, you do. You need to purchase a variable speed tape recorder because you can actually double the speed in which that professor is talking. You can adjust the pitch so it sounds virtually like normal speech. This time, as you're listening, you do exactly the same thing as you did the first time. You intently listen. You vividly see what he's calling out. You make believe he is talking to you one-on-one. And, most importantly, this time, when he says something that you know that you'll be tested on or that is important information, you simply shut the tape off and you write down the note. At the end of this, you virtually listened intently to this lesson twice. And when you're told something two times and you vividly saw it and had interest in it, it's going to have an effect on the memory. But now you have notes, the same type of notes that you would have if you read a chapter. You read the chapter, and as you read the chapter, you pull out key bits of information, and you write them down in your note sheet. Now what you do is you take your note sheet, and you try as hard as you can to condense those notes. You have the notes written out. Now you read your notes and try to condense them down. Change sentences into phrases. Change phrases into key words. So that if you took your new condensed note sheet to class, you'd get an A. Well, virtually, what you've done this time is you've gone through the material three times. Once in the initial lecture, once in the secondary on the cassette tape, three times on revising the notes. If it was a chapter that you've read, you've gone through it also twice. You've read it once, you've committed it to notes, and now you've redone the notes. Well, this is what you do now when you have your notes. You simply take each note, each key phrase, each key word. You use the powers of your imagination and you turn those words into pictures using your imagination. Into pictures. Once you take all of the key information into pictures, you now take each picture and you build a ludicrous, nonsensical, funny, ridiculous story in your mind's eye. So you have a story similar to the Statue of Liberty, a story that doesn't make any sense. It's ridiculous, it's ludicrous, it's nonsensical. You review that story three times in your mind's eye. You can even say it out loud, just as we did the Statue of Liberty story. And you take the first peg, the first item on your story, and you put that on the first peg on the list of your choice. If you have maybe 50 or 75 bits of information in your story, take the first peg and put it on the first peg of your house list. Here's an example. If the Statue of Liberty story was 23 bits of important information regarding an exam, you would just take the Statue of Liberty and put it on the first peg of your house list using action. Now, on that first peg, you really have about 23 bits of information. If you make another ludicrous, nonsensical story, you take the first peg, the first piece of information in that story, and you put it on the second peg of your house list, etc. This is how law students remember virtually incredible large amounts of information for exam time. Contract law, for example, has over 700 bits of important information. Students take all 700 bits of information, turn them into pictures, make a ludicrous, nonsensical story, take the first picture, which is a contract, meaning all those pictures in the story are pertain to contract law, and they put that contract on the first peg, on the first peg in their house list, using action. Maybe the second group of information regards to criminal law. Maybe there's 900 bits of information in criminal law. You take each bit, turn it into a picture, build a ludicrous, nonsensical story, take the first picture, which in this case would be a criminal, and you put it on the second peg of your house list. Now, people always ask me, they go, Kevin, how long will it take me to turn these things into pictures and build a story? Well, the story is not the difficult part. We learn the Statue of Liberty story, which is 23 bits of information, if you include all the other ones, actually almost 30 or 40 bits of information, in less than 10 minutes. So to do 700 bits of information shouldn't take you no more than 30 minutes, maybe 40 minutes. But this is the important thing. Once you do it, it's committed to memory. You're getting an A. You're acing the exam. But most importantly, if you're a student, you're actually committing the knowledge to your long-term memory so you can use it at later times in the future. You can either work hard or you can work smart. With this method, you virtually guarantee that you'll get an A in the exam because it's just like bringing in your notes. I had a student tell me one time, said, Kevin, got a 98 on my exam. I was the first person done. And I said, well, which one did you get wrong? She said, well, it was an item that we didn't have in our notes. So obviously she didn't commit it to memory, she didn't have it in her notes. So obviously important to take the proper notes and complete notes. What I'd like you to do now is I'd like you to shut the tape off, go to the workbook, and follow the examples in both reading and pulling out key information and showing you how this picture scene actually works. Shut off the tape and do it now. Okay, now that we've covered those two bits of information in terms of studies, and I think that's really the crux of learning, let's talk about another item, and this is in pertain to formulas and numbers. Now, numbers are not covered in detail in this particular Mega Memory program. The reason is, in order to do numbers effectively in long sequences, we're talking digits of over seven, seven digits at one time, we use a little bit more complicated method. It isn't really complicated, but in order to teach it to a student, it takes about 6 hours of training the mind to comprehend numbers. Since numbers are so abstract, so two-dimensional, we need to turn them into pictures, and there is a very complicated way of doing it. Once the mind gets acclimated to it, it is very, very easy, very speedy, but that is in an advanced program. You need to walk before you can run. But an equation, such as a calculus equation, can be recalled very easily using mnemonics. Let me give you an example. What I'd like you to do right now is vividly imagine and picture in your mind's eye two bees flying around a large clock. Vividly see two bees flying around a large clock. The top of the clock pops open and out springs a large tree root. You notice all over the tree root is blueberry pie smeared all over the tree root. I want you to imagine a nun begins to take off some of that blueberry pie and eat it. And as she does, she gets poisoned and falls over dead. She begins to eat some of the pie, gets poisoned, and falls over dead. She's laying down there dead. A dump truck comes up and begins to pour sugar all over her. Big piles and piles of sugar she begins to dump all over the dead nun. You see in your mind's eye, out of the pile of sugar, out pops a large cross, a large wooden cross. Let's do it one more time. I want you to vividly see two bees flying around a clock. Out of the top of the clock comes out a tree root. All over the tree root is blueberry pie. A nun begins to eat some of the blueberry pie off that, gets poisoned, falls over dead. A dump truck comes up and starts pouring tons and tons of sugar all over her in a big pile. Out of the top of the pile comes a big X, or big wooden cross. Well, what you've really done, if you've committed to memory a calculus equation. Let me give you an example. The calculus equation is 2B, which are the two B's, times, which is the clock, the square root, which is the tree root, of pi, which is the blueberry top pie, minus n, which is a dead nun, equals, which is the sugar, equal sugar substitute, x, which is the wooden cross. You see, we've committed it to memory that quickly, in less than a minute and a half. Now imagine if I was a teacher and you were taking calculus or any other math formulas, how fast I could teach you to recall virtually limitless numbers of formulas by using this method. What I'd like you to do now is go to the workbook, follow the exercises on formulas. Do that now and then come back to the video. As we can see, students virtually in any type of situation can apply mnemonic techniques to virtually anything that they want to recall. What I'd like you to do now is go back to the workbook, follow up the final exercises before we continue with the next lesson.